matter of.
Listeners, and welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 113 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the baseball remains locked out, if you guys have not been paying attention. Yeah, we had hoped that by the time since we are recording every other week, we had hoped 2 weeks ago that by the time we recorded again, there would be some sort of resolution. There's not. We'll talk more about that in the second half of the show. But there has been some developments since the last time we talked. But I realized that because we talked about the captain last time and we didn't really talk about much Mets stuff, I completely skipped over a rather significant Mets bit of news, which is that the Mets are retiring Keith Hernandez's number this year at a ceremony in July. This is similar to Jerry Kuzman's number retirement. This is a further indicator of a shift in attitude on the part of the Mets toward being more inclusive with respect to number retirement. I personally think that's a positive thing, but there are, you know, a whole spectrum of thoughts on this. And Michael and I wrote a piece a while back when Jerry Kuzman's number was being retired about this. And like, should the Mets be more inclusive? Should they keep it really exclusive? And we had a bit of a talk about that last time. But yeah, it seems like Keith is continuing the trend toward more inclusivity in number retirement.
I mean, I feel like there's always been a balance between, you know, the Wilpon Mets and the Yankees. Like, there has to be some middle ground between retiring any human being who has worn the uniform and never retiring anyone. And Keith is like a completely, like, you can't argue against Keith Hernandez having a retired number, I don't think.
I think this, you had to do Keith because it was completely overdue. Because he was such an integral part of not only that 86 team, but like, he just changed the culture the team. And so just in Mets history, he's an important figure now being, you know, in the broadcast booth. So it was definitely long overdue. And I think this definitely paves the way for David Wright now. You couldn't do Wright without, you couldn't do David Wright before Keith Hernandez because it just wouldn't be fair to Keith. So I'm hoping maybe that means in 2023, that means David Wright will
that's what I'm hoping
get his number retired. And also that's his first year on the ballot, I think, on the Hall of Fame ballot.
Oh my God, we're so old. Jesus.
We're so old.
Oh God.
Christ, David Wright's already going to be on the Hall of Fame
ballot. Yeah, the list of people going on the ballot is
it's uncomfortable. It's
humbling. Yeah, it's like, these are people that I watched like as an adult.
These are people who are
younger
than I am.
Yeah.
In many cases.
Yeah, God damn it. But
one of the things that's nice though about like David Wright next year or Keith this year also, and hopefully like a lesson learned from the Tom Seaver statue situation, is it's really nice to retire numbers or, you know, induct folks, do other kinds of honors when they're still around to enjoy it.
Yep.
When they could still be like a part of that ceremony. And I hope that, you know, helps kind of keep the Mets family closely knit, helps keep, you know, ex-players really engaged with the team. Like it, you know, I don't want to miss out on that opportunity again, like they did with Seaver.
Well, yeah. Also, Allison, you were at the game last year, right? When they, with Fonzie, and like, it was nice to see Reyer Donez again. And I think, Carlos Baerga, I think, was there. And it's like, well, we're remembering some guys, like, you know,
Mets never remember guys.
No, I was like, you know, it's my childhood. Because, you know, I was even talking how I took Reyer Donez for granted, and I wish I appreciated him more for who he was growing up. So just seeing him there, it's like, okay, now I can give you like a proper cheer. Like now as an adult, I can appreciate like the majesty that was Fray Ordóñez. And, you know, like, you just like, you have a bit different perspective now. And like I said, it was my childhood seeing those guys again. So it definitely ended like, you know, retiring numbers. You can bring all these guys back. You can remember some guys. So I always think it's nice. Just, and it doesn't cost you anything. Like if anything, you make money because the game sells out.
It's a guaranteed sold out game.
Yeah, like, there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
I think that, like you said, Linda, I think this does pave the way for David Wright in a very specific way, because they're clearly like going back and picking the most significant guys from each era that are not yet retired. Obviously, like from the 69 Mets era, Seaver was the most significant, but his number is already retired by nature of the fact that he was a Hall of Famer. But Jerry Kuzman was probably like the next most significant guy of that era. And so his number has been retired. And then you have the championship, the 86 championship team, which was a tough one to do because there wasn't really one guy that was the face of the team the way that Seaver was for the 69 Mets. So I get why they kind of waited a while for that to happen. But I think, like you mentioned, Linda, Keith's broadcast career kind of like kicked him over the edge of the other guys like Carter or, you know, Doc Gooden that might have been the guy from that team to get the honor. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily be against.
He's essentially a Met for life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, I think the thing that was like kind of iffy, or at least if you're putting yourself in the Wilpon shoes, obviously the Wilpons like had the line at Hall of Fame, but also I think that like many people thought, well, you know, Keith is a Cardinal and he's more well known for his Cardinals years than his Mets years. That can be argued one way or the other, but I think the broadcast career really does kick it into overdrive for Keith over the other guys like Carter, yeah. Kuzman. I mean, not Kuzman, Gooden, Strawberry, those guys to sort of be the representative of the 86 era Mets. Also, I mean, he was the first captain that the Mets ever designated. So I think that also is like something that, you know,
good point,
sets him apart from the others. Long overdue. And also
it keeps your history alive that way too. Like, you know, I can always, you know, if I ever have children, they look up, be like, who is number 31? Or, you know, I hear Piazza was really good. And, you know, I can tell them I got to see Mike Piazza play. I got to see David Wright play. And, you know, it kind of connects you to the next generation, like my dad and Seaver, me and my dad and my Seaver. So it's a good way to just, you know, the Mets, I mean, even Buck Showalter said it. They do have a rich history. It might not seem like it, but they do.
Yeah, I mean, they may not have the storied history of the team down the street, but
no,
they have a rich history.
When we shine brightly.
It's true. And you know,
this is more like Siberia in the wintertime.
Right.
It's opposite X spectrums there. You go from desert, like a tropical oasis, to Siberia
with one campfire.
And but polar bears.
That's you, Jacob DeGrom. Don't go out.
Yeah, yes, please.
Keep stoking those flames. Throw another log on the fire.
And I mean, as we move through, you know, the eras of Mets history, you have Keith of the 86 Mets. And then when you move to like the 99-2000 era Mets, that Mike Piazza's number is already retired. And he is clearly the standout of that era. And then when you move on to the 2006 era Mets, there's David Wright right there. So like, he really is the next in line. And then if you think about the current generation of Mets, it's Jacob DeGrom. And I think that like, even if he never throws another pitch again, knocking on wood, he obviously will throw another pitch again.
Don't put that in the universe.
But I'm just saying, even if he didn't, I'm not saying it's like that's even likely, but I'm just saying, even if he literally never threw another pitch again, he'd still be number retirement level Mets legend. Yeah. So I think that like, you know, as you move down to the more recent era, like it makes total sense that David Wright is next. He should be next. And I hope he is.
Oh, and then there's the whole debate about Beltran, too.
I would do it, but I think it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough. His tenure wasn't so long that it's, you know, that he's a huge chunk of this team's history. I feel like there's just, there's some challenges there and not quite enough to get over them.
But if he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, does that change things?
It might.
If he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame as a Met, sure, but I don't think he would necessarily. I think he's the classic blank hat guy.
Yeah, he's a classic blank hat guy. Yeah. It's really hard to pick which team he would go in as. I think something that would tip the scale is would be if he had managed the Mets, like planned. And I don't even necessarily think he would have had to have managed them to a World Series championship or anything, as long as it didn't, his managerial tenure didn't end in like total disgrace and like he was really bad at managing. If he was like a decent manager who lasted like multiple seasons and did fine, like I think that might have pushed it over the edge too. But the fact that instead of managing the team, they like decided he was not going to manage the team because of the scandal, like that kind of pushes it almost in the opposite direction. Like neutral would have been like, if he was never in line to manage the team in the first place, then it would have been a little bit more interesting. But now I think it almost seals the deal the other direction, sadly, because I feel like his legacy is tarnished.
I feel that too. Like he embarrassed the organization. Like they had to fire their coach they just hired. So I think that
it was
a black eye.
Nasty.
Yeah.
All around. It's just a mess. Classic mess.
Because it makes me sad because Beltran is like one of my top five favorite Mets like ever. Yeah. So, but
it was.
Now, I know I wouldn't. But I saw somebody else pose Jose Reyes.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
I mean, I wouldn't put it past the team.
I wouldn't put it past the Mets to do it. No, I mean,
like, write Reyes together forever in history.
Definitely make me feel super duper sick.
Yeah. I would probably rage quit. I think that like, I don't know. Maybe it's dramatic to say that because like I thought I seriously contemplated rage quitting when the Mets brought him back. After the domestic violence incident, but like to retire his number is like a whole nother thing. Like that's like putting him on a pedestal. That's not just
You can almost say that that bringing him back was just a purely baseball decision, even though he sucked and everyone knew he would suck. And he
wasn't even because he was bad.
But like, you know, you could even say like, oh, he was a warm body capable of playing baseball, like, and that's what they needed. You can almost say that. I'm not saying you should, but there's no practical reason to retire someone's number. That is just purely an honor that should be given to those who have earned it and not to wife beaters, for example.
Yeah. Ideally not.
We'll see.
Yeah. Time will tell, I guess.
So speaking of, well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions, former Mets GM Zach Scott was actually found not guilty of DUI charges by White Plains City Court. That's another Mets news item that's kind of happened in the intervening weeks since we last recorded.
Gonna pass out, folks. Pass out in White Plains in front of a traffic light at 4 a.m. That is apparently the place to do it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I know a little bit about the particulars of the case in the sense that I read the police report that everyone else read. And I know what the news outlets told us about it. But I don't know about like whether this was actually the right decision legally and whether the argument that he was actually operating the vehicle and thus driving while under the influence, like held up in a court of law, whether that's the right choice. I don't know. They said he was asleep and like pulled over like in the intersection, but like maybe the car was in park. I don't know. Like what actually you have to be doing to be like considered driving or operating the vehicle. So like maybe he didn't quite meet the definition, but
the Florida energy coming off of this court case was
a lot.
Legit.
Yeah. And also there's a big difference between being found not guilty and being innocent too.
Of course. Of course. And yeah. Like we've said on this podcast many times about many incidents, sadly, like what the threshold for what should be considered for someone being found guilty in a court of law is not the same threshold as they deserve to keep their job or play baseball or be a GM of a baseball team, right? Like those are different thresholds. Cause I saw some rumblings on Twitter after this not guilty verdict came out of people being like, oh, they fired him for no reason. No.
Yeah, there was reason.
Just because he was found not guilty.
Blasted at a work party and then went driving afterwards.
Right. Just because he was found not guilty doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong, first of all. And second of all, like, even from a practical standpoint, even if you really think that Zach Scott didn't do anything wrong and you're the Mets, you have to sit there and wait for months while this court case plays out before you decide whether to fire your like lame duck GM.
Anyway.
He wasn't even the real GM anyway. He was just the GM because the first guy was a predator.
A sex pest.
I would encourage anyone who doesn't think you should anything less than a criminal conviction. I would encourage all of those people to go up to their bosses and tell them to go fuck themselves and see what happens.
Yeah, right.
Call it an experiment.
Anyway, so I mean, like, genuinely, I say this, like, all the best to Zach Scott. I hope that this was a wake-up call for him and that he finds the help that he needs. I genuinely mean that. But he shouldn't be the GM of the Mets. And it was the correct decision to fire him. And like all those like nice signings that you guys liked that the Mets did, they wouldn't have been able to do if they had waited if they had not fired their GM and just kept him on and then like waited for this court situation to play out. And then MLB gets locked out and the Mets had not signed anyone. Lo and behold, is that what you want?
Like, or Sandy would have been in charge still.
That's what would have happened. So yeah. Would have been very cool. So that's like one minor Mets thing of note. Other minor Mets thing of note is that, of interest in particular to the proponents of extending Brandon Nimmo has changed agents to Scott Boras, as has Carlos Correa, notably.
I was gonna say Boras is getting a lot of play right now.
Yeah. I mean, he was already
he's good at his job,
and I think Jonathan India too. I feel like there's another one.
There might be one or two others. Scott Boras was already the most like prominent player agent. Like he just is because he's good at his job. And also he pisses off people in baseball. And including the Mets. But I think that the fact that we're currently in like a CBA negotiation period is also influencing these things a bit because he is, you know, front and center. Like they always, every time there's like new developments with the labor situation, he gets asked about it and he's out there being quoted in all the papers and stuff like that. And I think the players see that and they know that like, oh, we're in a pretty tense labor time, better, you know, sign with an agent that has my back. And they know that Scott Boras will, for better or worse, always have their back. So I think that that's,
yeah, I think that's what makes him so frustrating to so many people is that, And you know, you can have opinions about him and how good or bad he is for the sport and your team or whatever, but he is good at his job.
Yeah.
He gets people large amounts of money. And moreover, when those others suggest that he should not be getting lots of money for his players, he laughs in their face, which I think is ultimately what pisses off people the most, is that he is extremely public about how he feels about baseball being such a cheap sport when it comes to taking care of its players.
Yep. So I think that the chances of a Brandon Nimmo extension may have gone down a little bit now that he is a Boras client. Not to say that the Mets shouldn't pursue it anymore, that they should just like give up. I just think that the Mets don't have the best relationship with Scott Boras and are not known for signing extensions to his clients. Not that it's not been known to happen, but you know, obviously Conforto was a Boras client and he walked, and you know, now Nimmo's a Boris client too. So we'll see what
happens. That's why you should sign Chris Bryant.
Yes.
And play the outfield.
Yes. And there have been, so there have been some rumblings about what the Mets may or may not do post lockout. And
there has been either everything or nothing.
Or nothing.
Everything or nothing. Basically, it's been so funny, depending on the source. Like, basically, we got an Andy Martino report recently that was like, they're done making moves. But then we got a tweet from John Heyman the other day that was like, the Mets might consider adding another significant starting pitcher and hitter. So like, John Heyman says they're going to do everything. Andy Martino says they're going to do nothing. I'm not going to make any like serious speculation about this, but all I'll say is trace the leaks to what you think their sources are. And you can probably figure out why one is tweeting one thing and one is tweeting another thing. But the consensus and sort of middle ground among these, like this spectrum of reports, seems to be that at least another starting pitcher is a priority for the team if they can do that.
Which I agree with.
Even though as much as I would love them to sign Chris Bryant, and I think he's the perfect fit, I think that they need to, if they're going to do one or the other instead of both, they should do both. They're going to do one or the other, they should get the starting pitcher. I think it's more important.
Well, there were some rumblings about Kershaw.
There have been rumblings about Kershaw, which would be wild. It's like, imagine Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, and Clayton Kershaw in the same rotation. That is wild. I mean,
it almost seems unfair.
I think it's from since Jake entered the league. They're the top three in ERA since 2014. So they would have the top three pitchers in ERA in the same rotation. And Kershaw would be the number three.
Yeah, Kershaw would literally be the number three starter, LOL.
This is stupid.
Which would be stupid and amazing. But I mean, as I can speak confidently, as someone in my 30s, there's a lot of decline risk involved in such a rotation.
I'm a few months away from not even being able to describe myself as mid-30s anymore. So
what a blow.
Mid-30s. It's awful.
What a blow. But yeah, so it does carry, there is some risk involved in, you know, putting like not all your eggs, but putting a lot of eggs in the, you know, latter stages of career ace basket, which the Mets would be doing in that case. But and I said this in Amazing Avenue Slack when we were discussing the possibility of Clayton Kershaw and potential alternatives, like to me, and this is what I said about Scherzer too, when they were, you know, when those rumors were happening to me, you know, Clayton Kershaw is the best starting pitcher still available, period. And so I say Clayton Kershaw plus his risk is better than Yusei Kikuchi or whoever that you know that the ceiling is not nearly as high, you know?
Yeah.
So I hope that they at least sign someone, even if that ends up being like a Kikuchi level sort of guy.
I really want Rondon. That's my guy.
Rondon would be a good signing. I would support
If it's not Kershaw, my guy I would go after would be Rondon. Because they don't have a lefty. They need a lefty.
Yeah, they don't have any lefties, either in the rotation or the bullpen.
Unless literally, you make like Peterson, the long man out of the bullpen or something.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, like David Peterson would be. And he's like... You want
the bullpen is the other thing they need to be working on right now.
Yes.
Right. Which that's the other thing. And I think that they know that and will be signing some dudes of some note. I don't know. The relievers are kind of always available. So hopefully after the lockout, they can grab some of those. But in an ideal world, like Peterson is still like your sixth or seventh guy. Which I think he kind of is right now.
Doesn't necessarily mean that he shouldn't, that he won't start. I mean,
he probably will.
Your sixth or seventh guy is going to get many, many starts.
I mean, gesticulates broadly at Carlos Carrasco's season last season. How many innings do you think you can get out of him?
I know. Yeah. I mean, they lost Cookie, they lost Lucchese, they lost Peterson. They lost
everybody.
They lost Jake. Like,
but But
I think Walker was hit or miss. Like, so I think Strowman was only the only one who stayed healthy.
Well, Walker and Walker was so good. They really drove him into the ground.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have the depth to give him breaks. Like, that was, you know.
Yeah, well, their depth was. I'm still so upset about Lucchese.
I know. Sad chirp noises once again.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Instagram is to be believed, you guys, Carlos Carrasco is in the best shape of his life. We have the first in the best shape of his life of 2022. If you way guys go, haven't cookie. Seen you it, go. Disha Thosar wrote an article about Carlos Carrasco's Instagram video workout. So I think that officially counts as the first in the best shape of his life of 2022 goes to Carlos Carrasco. Congratulations.
I pointed this out on Slack, and you know, him, like, anybody rehabbing hasn't had access to team doctors. So, like, are they rehabbing properly? Or are they, you know, are
I mean, in some cases them? That could be an upgrade.
Well, not true, but still, like, it kind of worries me though, especially, you know, with Jake. Like, does he know how to properly rehab from missing half a season?
Yeah. It is concerning.
I would like to imagine that all of these team trainers are able to work as like consultants for like $300 an hour or whatever. Cause that seems like the sort of thing that would be a true win-win. But yeah, no, it's, and I mean, and the other problem is, and you know, one of the things that I think was really rough for Cookie Carrasco and some other, I know he has a real first name, but I like to call him Cookie.
I do.
And a lot of these other guys that the Mets had trouble with all season long is that they didn't get real spring trainings or real like ramp up periods. You know, instead they just sort of had like lots and lots and lots of rehab, and it's not the same thing. So, you know, I really, as the sands of time shift through the hourglass, you do have to start to think like, are we going to mess up these guys' spring trainings again?
These are the days of our lives.
That is where we are.
The days of our Mets lives.
The days of our Mets lives. Like I alluded to at the top of the show, the latest in the walkout / collective bargaining agreement news is that the two sides are talking, which is still an improvement over last we spoke about this, which was during the dead of the lockout, and they were still not meeting at all. They have had a few meetings, including one earlier today, and there has been progress on a deal, but a resolution is still far away, according to everyone reporting on this. Evan Drellich tweeted today that the meeting today was, quote, heated. And Jeff Passan tweeted that a delay of spring training is now, quote, inevitable. But it still remains unclear if the season itself will be affected. Obviously, the more spring training is delayed, the more likely that the season will have to be delayed, because you have to have some semblance of spring training. But as 2020 showed, you can have a shortened spring training and still start the season. So we'll see. I'm hoping that, you know, this is a lot of still just like posturing, and the league knows that it still has a little bit of time left to hold out before the actual season would be affected, because I don't think like the league cares about spring training all that much. So we'll see what happens. To summarize the most contentious issues still to be worked out between the two sides, which I think it was Ken Rosenthal. Yes, it was Ken Rosenthal, wrote a really good article in The Athletic just summarizing everything. But basically the main issues are minimum salary for one. The players proposed a raise in minimum salary to $775,000. And the owners then countered with $615,000 in the first year, a raise then to $650,000 in the second year, and $700,000 in the third year of service, which is like not even close to what the players proposed. So they're still far apart there. Arbitration.
What a ridiculous place to be like nickel and diming too, because
so dumb.
It's not even that big a difference for them. Like, these are the cheapest players.
I know. I think it was, who was I having a conversation with this about this with? Was it Jared Seidler? I can't remember, but I was having a conversation with someone about this where I think that the words that they used were like, we're arguing at like the fringes of the sport here, which they kind of are. Like there aren't like a lot of like central things to the sport that they're arguing about right now. So the other things are arbitration and pre-arbitration bonus pools. And it's not the question of the pool itself. The players dropped their request for earlier free agency, and then the league agreed to a bonus pool for pre-arbitration players. So like that is set, but the league and the players differ significantly on what the size of the pool should be. Like,
yeah.
It's like a ridiculous difference.
Like, I think it's like between 100 million and like 10 million.
Yeah, it's really
different. Yeah, it's definitely like an order of magnitude.
Yes.
And it also, I mean, it still seems to be based on wins above replacement.
Yeah, so I was unclear about
supremely stupid on so many fronts.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different things that may or may not end up being based on WAR. One of them was these pools, the arbitration and pre-arbitration bonuses might end up being based on WAR, which would be dumb. But then there's also service time stuff. So that's another part of this. The union wants to give a pretty like broad swath of rookies a full year of service, including the top performers by WAR. I think they wanted like the top 30 performers by WAR. But the league thinks that's too many players to give this extra year of service time to. So this is a bonus. This is like the top players by WAR will be given like an extra year of service time to avoid service time manipulation. But so that's another thing that might end up being based on WAR. So it's like the top performers will get this like extra year of service time. The rookies will. And then there's the bonus pool might end up being based on WAR performance, which either of those things being based on WAR is an issue for many reasons. Not the least of which is, you know, I know that Craig Goldstein's been very open about this. I know that the folks over at Baseball Reference have been very open about this. Like, they are not comfortable with their metrics being used to determine folks' livelihoods. Like, that is just like,
this is also, this really is not like up. A nerds ruining baseball thing. This is all the nerds saying, no, it's not designed to
do. We don't want this. Yeah.
We don't want this power. Like, please don't.
Like, you can't like slice between two players whose WARs will probably be like a tenth of a point apart and say like, well, these two players are significantly different, and so this guy's going to get a thing and that guy's not. Like, I mean, you can. That seems to be what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But that's not a meaningful or appropriate use of the measure.
And it's like,
and was never meant to be that either.
No,
it wasn't.
When the guys who invent a metric are begging you not to use it like that, don't do it.
Right. And like, we know from just being people who look at this stuff all the time, how different the like BWAR and FWAR and WARP can be for the same player. And so it's like, which one are you going to use? I know that I saw somewhere.
One.
I know that I saw somewhere that they were going to average the two, but it's like literally averaging the WARs is like what you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, literally people like, get made fun of for making arguments based on the averaging the WARs.
And there's a whole bunch. And there's also like, I mean, relievers for starters.
Yes.
Any relief pitcher will be incredibly poorly served by this.
Or it's like a backup where, like,
catchers.
Yeah.
Catchers. Like, how do you evaluate catch? Like, catcher WAR means absolutely nothing because they don't include framing metrics in it.
No.
So it means absolutely nothing. You cannot capture Tomas Nito's value in WAR. You just can't. I mean, I'm not saying that like you know, Tomas Nido is actually a Hall of Famer or anything like that. But what I'm saying is that he's a lot more valuable than WAR tells you, because he's a really good pitch framer. And that's like one of the most valuable things a catcher can do. But it's just really hard to measure that and incorporate that into WAR. It's really hard to measure defensive metrics, period. Defensive metrics are incredibly flawed, but they are part of WAR. So it's just like when you look at a player's FWAR, like that includes his like UZR or whatever, which we all know is like an incredibly flawed metric, as they all are in various ways.
Great, measured over like 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
you get to see trends, but that's about it.
Yeah. It's like, all you can do is just see like general, like swaths of guys. Like obviously, you know, you can use like defensive metrics to differentiate, like, you know, these guys are elite, these guys are good, these guys are below average, these guys are bad. Like, you can probably generally do that with defense, but you can't like say this guy has, you know, 6.1 outs above average and this guy has 6.2, so he's gonna get the bonus. Like, that is not the like level we're working at here.
Well, and it's all they're really trying to do is get out of having to appropriately compensate all of the players. They're like, well, what if we only compensate
the good ones?
The ones that we, the good ones. It's like, yeah. Oh, well, how right. do you define the good ones? Well, we'll use this. It's like, what if you gave every rookie appropriate service time and everyone got a reasonable league minimum? And like, that's just, you know,
well, that's what unions are for, is to look out for all their members, not just the good ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So,
and of course, it goes without saying that absolutely none of this will have any bearing on the extremely large number of extremely impoverished minor league players.
Yeah,
who are not even part of the conversation and never will
be. Yep.
Just throwing that out there.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't even think they've been mentioned at all.
Nope. Not really. The only like, and this is like a roundabout way of mentioning minor leaguers, but it's not actually minor leaguers. There have been discussions about the international signing like period and whether there should be an international draft. And that, but like, and those players obviously become minor leaguers, but that's like a whole different set of issues with, you know, players like signing handshake agreements with teams when they're 14 years old and the exploitation of teenagers and preteens, honestly, which is just like, you know, a thing that is not talked about enough at all and just a terrible mark on the sport.
Just like take it as like fact, like, yeah, the Mets just signed the 16-year-old, like, yeah, sure.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, they just suspiciously happen to have all of the terms of the contract
already agreed to, yeah.
You know, it's like a guy asking a girl out on her 18th birthday. It's like, gross, dude.
Yeah, that means you thought about this for a long time before her 18th birthday. Like, come on.
You had that one
and
ready.
I mean, like, we talked about this with Juan Soto's brother. Like all of a sudden people thought he was going to sign with the Mets and everyone was all excited. And they was like, no, he's actually going to sign with the Nationals instead. Dude isn't actually signing with either team right now because he's not eligible to be signed yet. But of course, we suspiciously suddenly understand that he's going to sign with the Nationals. Like, it's just gross.
Yeah.
It's just like the worst kept secret.
Yeah. It's like the seedy underbelly of the sport.
It's very gross. And we've done whole segments about this and might do whole segments about it again in the future, because it's not likely to change anytime soon. A couple of other things that there's, you know, significant difference between the players and the owners on. The players, of course, want to raise the competitive balance tax threshold and the owners don't. That's a pretty simple debate that happens every collective bargaining agreement because baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but it has like a pseudo salary cap in the CBT. And the players are constantly saying, you know, owners, you should spend more. And the owners are saying, oh, we don't want to.
Well, that's what I found funny was where like Dick Monfort was on the negotiating committee and complained that he's too poor to afford the team.
Yeah, he basically did complain about how he's too
because affordable. Of like COVID and stuff. So then I don't know if you saw this tweet because then he wasn't there the next day. So I thought this was interesting, but there was never any follow up on it. It's by Eugene Friedman. And he said, after some additional thought, it's possible Montfort was asked not to attend yesterday's negotiation because he opened management up to greater financial disclosure under the National Labor Relations Act. Normally, employers only have to furnish basic financial information in collective bargaining. But when an employer says it cannot afford certain proposals or even existing CBA language, the obligation shifts and it may be required to open up its books to the union.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I really want to know if like that's what happened, because like,
if this country enforced labor protections, they'd be in trouble.
Right.
But like, you have Dick Montfort complaining he's poor. Come on.
Yeah.
But if you're too poor, you shouldn't sell the team.
Yeah, then you should sell the team.
Yeah. I mean, you paid the Cardinals to take Nolan Arenado.
Yeah. Yeah. So another thing that, you know, they're attempting to do in this collective bargaining agreement to address competitive balance, other than obviously the CBT, the league agreed to a draft lottery, which is something that the players wanted. You know, like for folks who are unfamiliar, like the NBA has a lottery form of draft. So baseball does not currently.
I mean, it does make it exciting, I'm not gonna lie.
So the league agreed to a draft lottery. So a lottery will exist in some form or another, it seems, in the final agreement once there is one. But the league and the players disagree on the particulars of the structure of this lottery. Like basically like how many picks should be in play for the lottery. Like part of the draft, because the whole draft is not going to be a lottery. It's
are they still cutting the rounds too, or is that back to normal?
No,
I haven't heard.
I don't think so. I think that was a COVID thing more than a CBA thing.
Okay,
but I don't know for certain if they're going to cut the number of rounds. That was not something I had heard about. That's something that that's something that from Complex to Queens folks probably know that I don't.
Tune in later this week.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure we'll talk about it.
I don't remember.
But other things, so like those are the main like basically like sticking points between the union and the league. Things that are likely coming regardless of where they land on all of the things that we already talked about. The universal DH, that is something that they agree on. That is something that's coming. NL fans, gird your loins. It's coming. I don't like it either, but it's coming.
I just want it to be over, honestly. Like,
I know
my dislike of the DH has in recent years just been dwarfed by my dislike of the uncertainty around the DH.
Yeah.
And additionally, my dislike of the Mets behaving as though there is a DH, even though there is
right?
not.
If it keeps my mans on the team, I'll accept it.
It that does benefit probably, the Mets very specifically.
It does, it does.
Yeah. Although watch there be a universal DH and then the Mets stop picking up bats only guys.
Yeah, you know.
That would
be on brand.
On brand.
It would be. Always behind. One step forward, two steps back.
But the universal DH is coming. And honestly, like, so I'm pro NL baseball and I will be until the day I die. But with the way the game is now, like, I wish I could turn back the clock, but I can't. Like,
but the MVP chance for Jay.
I know.
Every time
it's
he
so
came
fun.
Up the bat.
But pitchers just like have no interest in hitting anymore. They can't. They don't learn how. It's just like it's kind of pointless now. Like,
and I know everybody got upset because Jake hurt himself on the swing and.
But whatever. Something else that is coming is playoff expansion in some capacity. I think it's, I love the current playoff structure, so I'll be really sad to lose that. I think it's like kind of perfect the way it is. The only tweak I would make is make the wild card round a three game series.
I actually love the like irrational madness of the one game play.
Yeah, it's insane. I kind of love it, but it's insane.
It's insane. But
everybody
like,
was talking about like the NFL and like these are like the best games ever played. Like, did you not see the Steelers and Eagles? Like two teams who should not have made the playoffs and then got embarrassed in the first round. Like that's what a watered down playoffs is. Two teams that just make it and then immediately die as soon as they get in. Like, is that what we want? A watered down version?
I mean,
but that'll
be the Mets.
As you're going, but yeah. One of the things I love is the high stakes of the one game playoff when it is good teams.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get good teams.
Yeah.
And like, even though the Mets were on the losing side of a one game play-in, basically, like, I still sort of, that game was amazing.
See, I don't even count it as the playoffs. I'm like, they only made it in 2015.
It's hard to think of it the same way.
It's like one and a half.
I have a soft spot for chaos. I can't yeah. lie.
I love it. And I obviously, like, I have no idea, and I don't think it's been reported on, like, whether the league and the players are apart on, like, how much expansion there should be. Like, I don't know if the league wants more than the players or the players want more than the league. I just know they both want it, and so it's going to happen. It's just a question of, like, how many teams will be in the playoffs.
Well, they expanded it in 2020, and the Mets still didn't make it.
I know. I didn't think the 2020 playoffs were particularly good, but
no.
So I worry about, but it was also a COVID year and everything was weird.
Hard to judge.
I don't know. I do worry about the watering down of the playoffs, but I don't know. Teams should try to compete. And if more teams are trying to, like, win at the trading deadline, that does make for a better product on the field.
But then if you're like you could just skate in too, you can do the bare minimum still.
Yeah, one does wonder if it incentivizes, like, being mediocre.
But
to solve that, you do need to sufficiently, under this new structure, whatever it is, you do need to sufficiently incentivize winning the division and make that still really big advantage in the playoffs.
Well, and I would also point out that, like, as much as I don't want to incentivize being mediocre, it seems like everybody currently feels incentivized to be bad.
Yeah. So it's an improvement over that.
Mediocre teams than bad teams.
Yeah, the floor gets raised.
Yeah.
You know, baby steps. Right. Let's start with teams that actually want to be there on the field.
And, like, you know, the league, like, so I'm not trying to, like, give the league excessive credit here because they have really not given much. But the league acquiescing to a draft lottery is at least an acknowledgement, if nothing else, on the league's part, that tanking is a problem. Yeah. Because if they wanted to continue to toe the company line that tanking's not a problem in baseball, then they wouldn't have agreed to a draft lottery. They know that tanking's a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know. And the final thing that is seemingly coming is elimination of draft pick compensation for free agents. So that's, like, you know, like the qualifying offer stuff. Like, you sign a free agent, then the team gets a draft pick. So
which I think everybody hates. Doesn't everybody hate
it? Everybody hates it. It's really silly. So I'm glad to see that system go. I think it was really silly. And, you know, so that's good, I think. That's going away probably.
If we can at least start to chip away at some of this low hanging fruit where it's like, okay, do you hate this? Yes. Do you hate this? Also, yes.
Good.
That to me, but, you know, it's that easy. Why don't they have me in that room? I would have them out there in a minute.
Right. So since there was a lockout, during Hall of Fame voting, there was, like, outsized Hall of Fame discourse this year. I mean,
and it was always going to be that way this year.
That way this year. It was basically, like, you know, the perfect storm of factors. Like, there's lockout, so there's not, like, free agent signings to talk about to distract us from the Hall of Fame voting. And this was the last year that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, the two, like, sort of poster children,
I think, too.
And Schilling. I didn't mention him, but I forgot. That's true. The sort of poster children of the performance enhancing drug, the steroid era of baseball, of, like, whether, you know, steroid users should be in the Hall of Fame or not. And, you know, it seems like, at least in the eyes of baseball writers, they have decided that at least these two, they draw the line, and they don't deserve to get in. And, you know, people were particularly upset.
Poppy got in, though.
Yeah.
On the first ballot.
Surely he must be crystal clear.
Exactly. People were particularly
upset.
Hold
on, folks. I'm getting news.
Oh.
No, I was
joking. Oh.
We're so desperate for news that we're like, news?
I'm sure Big Poppy could never use steroids.
Yeah.
What's that I'm hearing?
Yeah. What am I hearing? So people were particularly upset that David Ortiz, who tested positive for performance enhancing drugs in 2003, although, you know, like there's some debate about the validity of that test, but basically got in on his first ballot while Bonds and Clemens did not. But as usual, all the discourse surrounded, like, should cheaters be in the Hall of Fame and not, like, you know, should people who enter sexual relationships with teenagers or people who beat their wives be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
I do think we saw a little bit of it. I think it got overshadowed, but I do think if we look at Omar Vizquel's performance, and I mean, I think what it ultimately shows is that if you're borderline, then it matters.
Yeah.
And most of the people who voted for him are the ones that didn't reveal their ballots. It's like, you cowards.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
But his numbers went way, way down since
they did.
Since the accusations came up.
The ballots should be public, by the way.
Yeah. All of them. Yep. Well, then how many entered a blank ballot? Or there was one, I think, who submitted like only a Jeff Kent only ballot.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Like, come on.
The Hall of Fame voting has become a farce and they have to figure something out, but I don't know what the answer is, honestly. So yeah, I mean,
it's
like
just a bunch of old white dudes. That's what the problem is.
Yeah. And I mean, there are people who I saw an article, in the Wall Street Journal that was basically like, they should do away with the character clause entirely. And I was like, no, like, but on the other hand, like, they're clearly not applying it evenly, like, at all. So I don't know. I just wish that, like, and this is why I want the ballots to be public, because I wish people would just admit, like, either you care about these things or you don't. And if you don't, you're going to vote a certain way. And if you care about them, you're going to vote a certain other way. But, like, you can't just be like, ooh, this matters when it's a guy I like.
Yeah, Poppy was nice to me, so I'm going to vote for him. Whereas Bonds, like, was mean to me, so I'm not going to vote for him.
And you know,
Bonds also is an abusive shithead.
Yes.
And I'm perfectly fine.
To be clear,
I would really appreciate it if any human were to point this out in the conversation about the Hall of Fame, because it seems to just be totally ignored, which is not surprising.
Yeah, but PEDs are the bigger crime, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, clearly they think, you know, on the field cheating is the bigger crime. And I disagree with that, especially when it comes to steroids and, you know, the whole era being marked by that, especially when it comes to like guys like Bonds and Clemens, who would have been Hall of Fame trajectory anyway without the drugs in all likelihood. These aren't guys who, you know, were borderline major leaguers who the drugs made them Superman. Like, they were already good and the drugs made them amazing.
I think happened is Bond saw the home run race between Maguire and Sosa. It's like, well, guess what I can do? And then he wanted the attention back, so that's why he did it. That's my conspiracy theory. Like, you thought you were great, now watch what I can do.
Yeah.
But also, like, I mean, if we're totally going to go on the PEDs angle, you let Selig in.
Yeah.
Like, that should have just taken PEDs out of the equation at that point.
I agree.
And PEDs are the story of baseball. If this is a museum about baseball, PEDs are part of the story. It's a chapter in baseball story.
Yeah, I saw a tweet to that effect recently, and I sadly can't remember who tweeted it, but it was basically like, the Hall of Fame is a museum. And if you treat it that way, then, you know, these guys should be in it because it's part of the story.
Yeah. If you want to put an asterisk or whatever, fine.
Put one next to Bud Selig too.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes. But, you know, I don't think that dudes who have done things as despicable as they have done deserve to be put on a pedestal.
Well, that was the thing about Andrew Jones too. Everybody wanted him in, and it's like, no, he was a domestic abuser too.
Yep. But interestingly, a different offense that's being brought back to the forefront too is that the degree to which sports betting is increasingly becoming a part of baseball's culture. For example, the Nationals just opened the first retail sports book, BetMGM, connected to a baseball stadium. Really, really bleak shit. Just like dystopian shit that I hate. But whatever. I mean, you know, it's an inevitable thing. Sports betting was always a bigger part of other sports like the NFL. And now it's just, you know, making its way into baseball. But the degree to which it's making its way into baseball has brought Pete Rose's status in baseball back to the forefront, because it's like, okay, if you are going to sanction sports betting, if you are going to sanction all of this and literally have casinos in your goddamn stadium, then Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
I mean, he knew the rules and he knowingly broke them. I don't know. He's still a tough case. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think it comes down to, with all of these cases, that, you know, the league is happy to kind of moralize where
it suits them.
It's easy for them.
Yep.
But then they just don't handle the gray areas reasonably well at all. Like, they don't even, half the time, they don't even try to come up with some reasonably coherent explanation for why this guy was just doing his best and that guy was cheating.
Yeah.
Doug Glanville just had a really good article about saying why Bond shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you saw it, but even from like a player's perspective who didn't take PEDs, and it was, you know, it was really well done. So, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, let's say you do a veterans committee does eventually put Bonds in, how do you judge these other guys who weren't playing in a level playing field?
Yeah, it's really like, tough.
Yeah, like Doug Glanville, like Jim, like Fred McGriff.
Well, and I just think ultimately, like, I often come off like I'm arguing that anybody who did PEDs should be considered for the Hall of Fame. And that's not entirely what I feel, but I do think that there's just a ton of inconsistency. It comes down to many other factors, like, do we like this guy?
Yeah.
And it's just a mess. And like, unless your rule is going to be nobody with a, you know, with a positive PED test at all, and I don't know what you're going to do with the people who are heavily suspected but without a positive test. I mean, and they've already broken that rule of no positive tests. So, yeah. So like, how do you handle this? The answer is you just have to kind of come up with your own explanations for why this works and not pretend like anything is a deal breaker when you already know it's not. So I don't know. I just do the work. Write the articles, make your ballots public, and like actually grapple with these issues instead of just
They become Ken Rosenthal writing articles about how much of a burden it is to vote.
I know.
Then it becomes all about them.
Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah. I don't know. I don't have the answers.
None of us do. Well, we will end the show without answers, with walk-off wins, something that is much happier, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Serovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Okay. Gonna get through this. As we were saying, retirement numbers. I was at Henrik Lundqvist's retirement ceremony on Friday, which ended up being the most expensive game in like NHL history.
I guess I'm not surprised by that.
Like, the average ticket was like $400 or something.
Jesus Christ.
Like we were saying, like, the Rangers do a good job. Like, I wish the Mets handled this kind of stuff as good as the Rangers do. Like, Lundqvist announced his retirement, and like a half hour later, the Rangers tweeted for retiring his number. Like, it was literally like an hour, a half hour later. There was like no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, nobody else is ever wearing number 30. So I know you don't follow hockey, but his career just kind of ended. There was no goodbye. There was no, it would be like if David Wright just never got a goodbye. Like if he just hurt himself and that was it, never came back, never got a send off. And after growing up and after, you know, he took the Rangers to the playoffs for like 12 of his first 13 seasons. And he took teams that had no right being in the playoffs all the way to the playoffs. And the team failed him consistently, just like David Wright. And he was just always there. Like I fell in love with those teams, and he's also a very beautiful man too. And so, like I met him once and like, I pretty much embarrassed myself because I just like mumbled something and it was not good. and even they had like a tribute video and, John Stewart was like, congratulations and everything. And he was like, but at one thing, did you have to be handsome too? So I bought tissues. I knew I would need them because I have a feeling Henrik chose this game. They chose it when they were playing the Wild, who his best friend on the team got traded, Matt Zuccarello, who was always my favorite. So he would be there. And like when they traded Zuccarello, they asked Henrik, you know, I've seen Henrik well, like this team has consistently failed him. But when they asked him that question, you could see his face just crumple. And then he started to cry and then cut the interview. Like Zuc is like the version of Wilmer, our Wilmer. Like he can go, but he won't have the emotional connection to other fan bases. So he was there. And so I think that just made it more emotional too. They do like a little ceremonial puck drop. And so then Zuc did that for Hank when he dropped the puck. And so then if the Jake and Dave hug was the hug, when Zuc and Hank hugged, like the whole crowd, like just like exploded, like that's become like the hug. Cause everybody had their like eyes on them the whole time. And then like when the Rangers came out and like warmups, they were all wearing number 30, like Lundqvist jerseys. And then seeing Lundqvist 30 and goal again was kind of trippy. So I had to explain it to Allison too. Like the Rangers went from Lundqvist to Igor. And that would be like if the Rangers went right from Seaver to Jake, because now they have this new kid who is like just incredible. And then I didn't realize it, but then he had a new helmet made and he has Hank on his helmet now. So because he grew up, he's from Russia, and he said he would play video games. He would always be the Rangers because Hank was his hero growing up, and he wore number 30 over in Russia. So he's like the perfect replacement. But yeah. But then when they raised number 30 to the rafters, that's when I lost it. And then I went Sunday again. And so when they raised the number to the rafters, like they just kind of raised it straight up. And then when I went back Sunday against the Kraken, the new Seattle team, they had moved it. So now he's in his like rightful order. So it's like weird. Like, again, like, how did I see like somebody play their whole career and get their number retired? Like, ugh, I'm so old. like, this is just wrong. Like, oh, this then like my favorite Ranger of all time too. But yeah, it was just a beautiful ceremony. He didn't cry, thankfully, because I definitely would not have survived that if he did. But you know, you could see him getting emotional. And Allison, you were at his last game. Like, we were both there.
I know. That's wild. Like, wow. I just, like, my first hockey game ever, just a random ass game. And it ended up being, like, the last thing I did before COVID and also Henrik Lundqvist's last game.
Yeah, it was just, so, like, looking back on it, that's, like, a bittersweet game because they played awful and got blown out.
It was not great.
No, and then I guess when he came in replacing Igor because Igor wasn't playing well. And then, so, yeah, he came in for the third period. And, like, I didn't realize that was literally it. A blowout loss where he came in as the replacement was his.
That is very David Radian.
Yeah. Yes, it is true.
And so, So, but like, it was just so good to see him again. And he seems at peace with how his career ended. I'm like, I guess if he's at peace with it, I have to make peace with it. But I'm like, but I don't want to. I'm so upset. I'm like, the way they handled everything. Because he was loyal to the team. They said, do you want to be traded? Because they, you know, they're like, we're rebuilding. Do you want to, you know, get out of here, try to win a cup somewhere else? And he said no, because he had a no trade clause. So his loyalty kind of ended up working against him in the end, and then they just cut him. So I don't know, it still bothers me, but it was a good night. I'm glad I went. And then of course they lost in the most stupid fashion possible.
At least the Mets won David Wright's final game.
They did.
It wasn't a stupid fashion.
In the stupidest way possible.
You know, stop having number retirement ceremonies, because they lost on Mike Piazza's number retirement ceremony too.
Oh, they sure did. Rockies. I was at that rain. One. In the rain.
The game was miserable. Like, is it the adrenaline, like, from the ceremony? Like, is there a letdown? I don't know. But
baseball perspectives, get on this.
Yeah, I need somebody to figure this out, because the Rangers are 2-9 in retirement ceremony. So can we like figure this out so it doesn't keep happening? And then I had to deal with the snow getting home, and it was an emotional night. But then when I went back on Sunday, it was kind of like a nice bookend, because then they won in like crazy fashion on Sunday. And then they always do the first stars of the game, the three stars of the game, and then their new goalie, Igor, was the first star of the game. So then we went from the beginning of the weekend chanting Henrik to the end of the weekend chanting Igor, and he was like waving and stuff. So it was a nice kind of like bookend. Like, I think I finally put Lundqvist to bed. I promised myself I wouldn't get Igor's jersey until Henrik had officially retired. I couldn't cheat on him. So I'm like, I think I can finally put him to bed and finally buy my Igor Shesterkin jersey. So that's my walk-off win. Definitely needed tissues. And the Ranger, I actually had the Ranger game on. They won today too. So come May, if they're in the playoffs, I might not be functioning. So keep an eye out for that.
I'm glad you were able to experience
Make that. Sure your Linda is getting plenty of food and water and sunshine.
Oh my yes. God.
Check in on your Linda.
Oh yes. My God. I can't be seen in public. That was the other thing. In the Henrik Lundqvist era, they won every playoff game 2-1. Oh my God. I swear that took years off my life. Like, why couldn't I just one easy win? Just one. Oh. All right. But that's it. That's it. It was a good thing. It was a happy weekend.
Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Mine is not quite so heartfelt, but I discovered a new TV show, new for Ooh. Me, that I am really enjoying, and it's The Great, and it's great. I don't know what exactly I was expecting, but it's the Elle Fanning show, loosely based on the life of Catherine the Great, and it's just so much fun. It's really dark. It's like not a like light and fluffy show, but it's also really funny. And it's dark without being bleak, which I feel like for me is a really key distinction in what I will enjoy spending my time watching.
Yeah.
And this is awesome. And we're almost at the end of the first season. There's a second season already out. So, just enjoying it thoroughly. The writing is good. The performers are good. Elle Fanning is fantastic, which is no surprise at all. Always been a fan, and it's great. There's nothing really like it on TV right now. It's just it's just like an extremely enjoyable way to spend an hour.
I'll have to put it on my list, because dark and funny but not bleak is like definitely my brand.
What's it on? Like, what do I need a streaming service?
Hulu. Okay. I mean that's what Hulu always confuses me, because it can be a Hulu show or it could be not a Hulu show.
Right.
I think this is a Hulu show.
Okay. I do have Hulu, so I could check that out. As do
I. So, okay. I will check it out.
But yes, do check it out. Enjoy it. And you will pause it every 5 seconds. Like, who is this person? Do I know this person? And the answer is amazingly no. It's like an entire show cast completely with dozens and dozens of that guy.
That guy. Oh, that's always me.
Being familiar face.
Where's that guy? My walk-off win for this week is that over the weekend, we had a surprise party for my friend's 30th birthday, and that was also a combo surprise bridal shower for her.
Oh.
She's getting married next month, this month, I guess. It's not February. At the time, it was still January. And her birthday was in January. We surprised her. She thought, like, just a couple people were taking her out to lunch or whatever, but it ended up being, like, a bunch of us. And it was just really nice. We went to a brewery in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. And the snow didn't completely ruin it. I was really afraid. I was like, oh no, there's this big blizzard coming and we won't be able to drive. But then, like, as far south as us, it didn't end up being that bad. So, the roads were clear enough to pass and we were able to, do that. So that was nice. And it was just a nice day all around.
Did you get home okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent.
So that is my walk-off win for this week. While you are waiting for the hopefully resolution of the new collective bargaining agreement, you can go
please,
to amazinganime.com.
Here.
Please
give
please,
us
please,
something.
Please. I need this to be over. We
need
this
my
to
fix,
be over.
Man.
I was looking through my camera roll and it was all JD pictures. I'm like, I miss my mans.
To quote a tweet I saw today that I don't remember the tweeter. I'm very sorry. Girls don't want Valentine's. Girls want MLB's lockout to be over. Yeah. So please, 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 please. And the lockout soon. But in the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com. Our minors team posted the top 25 Mets prospects list. For Amazing Avenue, so you should go read that. And they did like a three-part podcast, at least a three-part podcast. There might be more, even more parts by now about it. So you should listen to our friends over from Complex Queens about that. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You should subscribe to this podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in hockey.